as I say, which is a key fundraising element. And we, but we still have a goal, and we are several thousand short of that goal. So I would encourage you to go to kboo.fm and click on donate to the extent that you are able, or send it in to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. All right. Thanks again, Sonia, and thanks to everybody who listened, and I'll talk at you with you next week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
This is Rick Paulson, producer of Inside Washington County. Instead of one of our regular interviews today with Rob as host, I thought I'd give Rob a call and find out what his take is on the results of the recent May primary election here in Washington County. So let's give Rob a call. We'll dial him up here.
Hello?
Hey, Rob, it's Rick.
Hey, Rick, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Just thought I'd give you a buzz here and get your thoughts on this May primary. How are you doing otherwise?
Oh, pretty good. You know, cabin fever's setting in now that it's been a few months. We're wearing masks when we go out. We're going out to shop and the pharmacy. We're having fun in our backyard a little bit. Betty's an excellent, gardener, I guess. And I like growing strawberries. And they'll be ready soon. I've read a lot, and I've had an opportunity to look at some pretty good reports on the primary election, and I've had some time to think about it. I don't know about you, but I found a few surprises.
Yeah, me too. I thought we'd share our perspective with our listeners. So in this year's primary, it was dominated pretty much by the pandemic. That's about all we were hearing all the time. How do you think that affected the campaigns and the voter turnout and even the results?
Well, you know, it's tricky because, first of all, campaigners had never been through this before. The candidates had never faced anything like this, and I'm sure they all planned traditional campaigns where they would knock on doors, talk to people, have house parties, and meet people in small groups, and of course have probably some large meetings. And the shutdown, pandemic shutdown, came right at the time when the campaigns would be heating up for the May 19th vote. So what did we do? We moved to continual mail. That mail advertising happened. Open up your mailbox and you'll get some things, sure. But we moved to social media and different platforms. And I saw attempts at debates on those platforms where candidates were having difficulty figuring out how to use social media properly. Some, not all. And certainly many of the potential Some were quite comfortable on the debates, and they would ask questions, and some were not. And take, for example, the Public Affairs Forum. They were having a debate with Democratic primary and also with the Beaverton mayor election. And my gosh, it was so stilted. Nobody's fault. The forum did as well as they could. They promoted it. But also, I think a number of potential listeners, voters, weren't so comfortable with that method. And I think they had maybe 100 people turn in. They had hoped to be at the Civic Center and have maybe 300 people. And us, our show, Inside Washington County, we had four debates of county races set up, and the people were willing to participate, debate against each other, and we had to accommodate them by having them go online and write the answers down. As host of our show, I wound up not only asking questions, but answering for all of those folks. It provided the information for people, but it was all very, very different. I'm not sure about how it affected the voter turnout. Logic would say if the candidates, Rick, have more difficulty reaching people, less people are likely to vote. As of now, we're not even a week away from the election, we're just a few days, but the Secretary of State's website says that we had a 46% voter turnout statewide, and at least for now, they're saying it was 46.3 or something, essentially the same, in Washington County. I took a look at the history, and the history of voting, especially in presidential primary years like we are now, has been a little higher than the non-presidential primary years, but it's ranged everywhere from lows in the mid-30s to highs in the mid-50s. This kind of seemed to fit right in the middle. And, of course, it was a presidential primary year where both major parties had already have already pretty much decided on their candidates, so I don't know how much excitement there was on either side. When it comes to the actual results with the same kind of voter turnout, I'm actually really quite surprised. I'm not sure that the results were impacted at all, even though the campaigning certainly was.
I was looking at the results in Eastern Oregon in Wheeler and Harney County, and their voter turnout was around 62-63%, which was a state high.
I wonder if Washington County will ever get that way. Maybe in rural counties, people are more involved in government, feel government involvement more, whether they're against it or for it, and they're casting their ballots because they feel closer to government. I don't know. It's always confused me as to why Oregon as a state, why this country doesn't have a voter rate over 80%. It's always confused me. It's never made sense to me at all.
You know, a few of the issues on the ballot were interesting as always, but I think Beaverton stood out as probably one of the more complex issues. The city of Beaverton will have a runoff election this November between incumbent Mayor Denny Doyle and Councillor Lacey Beattie. The city also passed several changes to its charter. So how will Beaverton's government be different with that change in the charter and possibly a different mayor?
You know, there's an awful lot of issues in that charter, and perhaps the first one, I'm not the first to say this, the Pamplin Press in an editorial were very strong about how they felt the silliness was to try and do a charter change and have an election for mayor in the same year. It left the candidates for mayor running for a position that was certainly less than clear. And as a result, we wind up with what used to be a strong mayor position is now going to be a council of six members instead of five. And the mayor will hire a city manager. The mayor will not be the city manager. How is that going to be different? Well, first of all, if we wind up having the incumbent returned, I think the incumbent's going to be perhaps a little bit bored finding himself being a mayor at the same level as the other folks in Oregon, because Beaverton's been the only city that's had the strong mayor program. I thought it was very interesting at the last minute to see Kate Arnold enter into that in order to not so much win the race for mayor. From what she told me that her primary purpose was to highlight the importance of the charter because she felt those changes were important to her. Now, those changes aren't just into the strong mayor program. There are term limits involved. There will be a sixth councillor to be hired, and the council should have a greater sense of say in policy making as well as in hiring. Now, granted, the city manager will do a lot of work. I think I'm more concerned about what wasn't in the charter change. First, I'll complain about term limits. I don't think term limits in any positions are particularly appropriate. I believe in the Constitution that talks about government for the people, by the people. And, you know, if you've got somebody in office that's been there a long time and is doing a good job, I'm not sure what's wrong with that. On the other hand, if you have somebody that's been there in office a long time, I know the incumbent has the advantage, but still, the voters have the right to vote the guy, the gal out, and they should do that. That's what democracy is. Democracy isn't set by a clock. Democracy is set by the people. I wish they wouldn't have put term limits in. Also, when I first came to Beaverton was about 33,000 people. We're now just around 100,000 people. I think it's way past time for us to stop pretending that Beaverton is a small city in Washington County. It's not. It's the second largest. And it's time that we stop electing councillors to represent the entire city. Folks need to come from neighborhoods. They need to be representative of those neighborhoods so that they can represent the people that elect them more effectively. To have each councillor represent the entire city makes no sense in an effort to try to be efficient. The elected who represents the city of Beaverton is the mayor. Councillors should represent the portions in which they live and the people they know.
So pretty much like house districts?
Yes, very much so. Much like house districts.
So right now, all the councillors could live on the same street on Cooper Mountain. And
the mayor could be on that same street with them.
Yeah, all and live in one neighborhood and have no idea what's going on elsewhere.
Exactly. I'm not sure that will ever happen.
No,
but
probably
yes,
not.
But you're right. It's allowed the way the charter is written, and it seems like a terrible mistake. And also, I would have liked to have seen some financial reform in campaigning involved in the charter. I'm not sure if that's the right place for it, and perhaps we'll discuss campaign finance reform later on. But I got to tell you, if we could put it in there, that sure would be nice.
Do you think districts, or in Hillsborough we call them wards,
mm-hmm.
Do you think that was purposely left out of the charter change?
I have to think so. The folks, the councillors, et cetera, and staff working on it are certainly not any more ignorant than I am. They're every bit as smart as I am. I'm sure that they considered it. And honestly, I can't understand the rationale. A small city, 20, 30, maybe even 40,000, sure, maybe you don't want to break it into neighborhoods because there's not enough difference in the characters. But if you look at districts or wards, you look at Hillsborough, like, and they have the wards, you can see that not each ward has the same character, the same nature, the same culture, if you will, as the other wards. And that would be true in Beaverton.
I always have to speak up when I hear people say, well, I want to vote for a Hillsborough city councillor, but I'm not sure that I live in his or her ward. And that's where voting differs, because the city at large in Hillsborough elects each councillor, whereas with the county commissioners, you have to live in the district to vote for that candidate. So you mentioned Kate Arnold in the race. She put up a pretty good showing with somewhere around 20-21% of the vote. In the November runoff, that 20% is going to be divided up between Mayor Doyle and Councillor Beattie. Any an idea how that will be parsed between those two candidates?
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma for the voter. And I think that, obviously, the incumbent mayor, Denny Doyle, has his supporters, and certainly Councillor Beattie, who got 35, roughly, percent, obviously has made a good showing. And it's really interesting, because the year of the woman was for running at candidates was sort of 2018, but I think it's still going on this year. And I think that some of Kate's support is likely to go to Councillor Beattie simply on a gender basis, that there's some folks out there, men and women, who simply want to vote for a woman and also can get a sense of time for a change. On the other hand, Kate Arnold and Mayor Doyle have worked on council together for, I don't know, 14 years or something like that, and I know that they agree more than disagree. They have so many similarities on policy that I think that a lot of Kate's supporters will vote for the mayor on policy. I've got to tell you, I think there's a more important factor than where Councillor Arnold's votes go. I think now that it's down to Mayor Doyle versus Councillor Beattie, everybody's going to look at the time for a change versus do you hang on to experience. And, of course, at the time of pandemic, that might be relevant. But what I find really interesting, Rick, on this one is initially before the charter passed, they were running, Councillor Beattie and the mayor, were running for mayor, which may or may not have included the job of running the city. And both of them had indicated they wanted the charter to fail. So not only are they now both running for a position that isn't really what they hoped to be running for, but all of a sudden the experience factor that the mayor brings to the race, the incumbent mayor brings to the race, isn't quite as important, because the experience of running a city, of being city manager and mayor, is awfully important in a strong mayor situation. It seems to me it's much less important when you're facing a brand new role for the mayor that is much less technical. So, sure, the incumbent still has the experience of being mayor, but is it as valuable in this campaign as it might be in others?
Yeah, that's a good point I hadn't considered. Mayor Doyle has half the experience to campaign on now.
Is kind of what
you're saying, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there were two positions on the Washington County Board of Commissioners, two openings on the May primary. In District 3, voters reelected incumbent Roy Rogers for, what was it, his 10th term now?
Not sure. It's been so many. I'm sure it's hard for both Mr. Rogers and I to keep count.
I think that's the number that I read in the newspaper.
Okay.
So he won by a significant margin. Now, in District 3, since Dick Scouten decided to run for Senate, that was open. There was no incumbent. So there was a runoff between three first-time candidates. And, of course, since none of those three scored more than 50% of the vote, there will be another runoff in November, Nafisa Fai and Jeffrey Hindley. So any surprises in that result? And what about the goals of the commission? Are they likely to change given that makeup?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think Commissioner Rogers was reelected by some 62% to 38% over a challenger who ran a strong campaign, Ben Marcotte. But it was really pushed. Roy Rogers has been there for, say, 10 terms, and you want experience. You don't change horses in midstream, especially when the stream has a whole bunch of waves in it, whether they're pandemic or pandemic financial. This is a tough time. And I think folks kind of stuck with what they knew. And in District 1, of course, they couldn't do that because Dick had moved on to try another arena. What was surprising, my understanding is the third candidate, the candidate who came in third with some 20%, Manuel Castaneda, I believe, Manuel spent more than both of these folks, and it was interesting to see two persons of color running against one Caucasian, and I just saw a lot of support for Nafisa Faye and the Democrats and the powers that be, a lot of people endorsing her, and I thought that she would kind of take it in a walk. I don't really understand why there's a runoff here. And to tell you the truth, I read in the paper anyway, I believe that they're right, Jeffrey Hindley was quoted as being surprised that he came in second. So we're all a bit surprised. It should be an interesting campaign, but when we have someone with so many endorsements and so much support running against someone who was surprised to make it to the runoff, I'm not sure. We're going to have to see. But as far as the commission's goals changing, no. Even regardless as to who wins in the November runoff, I don't think there'll be enough change in the overall character of the commission to have them change. They'll be losing a well-known liberal in, current Commissioner Dick Scouten, but I think that the overall makeup of the commission will keep the same basic philosophy no matter who wins in November.
You know, 2 years ago, before Andy Dyke retired, the whole Washington County Board of Commissioners was made up of men. And then Catherine Harrington was elected chair, Pam Treese was elected, and now we have a possibility for even a third woman to become a county commissioner.
That's true, but there are conservative women and liberal women and everything in between, and I appreciate the gender differences, and I think that you're right. Even with the chair being a woman, and if the other four all wind up being men after November, I think you still have the female influence that can be positive. And, you know, add another one, great. But I think it's more the philosophy, the way that they see the world and want to see Washington County be successful, that's even more important than gender. That might be a naive man talking, but that's what I think.
This pandemic mess has really created a tremendous economic hardship for the majority of Oregonians. You know, traditionally, when the economy is in rough shape and bond measures come up in elections involving tax increases, they have a hard time passing those. Yet Washington County voters approved all five bond measures that would increase taxes. Now, I don't know about you, but that was a surprise to me. I expected the library levy to pass, but I thought the others were going to struggle. What do you see there?
I was very surprised because I agree with your premise. Times are hard. Families are having a tough time getting food on the table, and here you're asking them for more taxation. Now, granted, some of this taxation, say the big taxation to help homeless, those taxes are really only going to hit the higher end, with a 1% or however many, and the higher end businesses. So that may have saved it. But there's something else. It's almost like many folks, even those with a history of having trouble trusting government, at a time when things are so crazy, and especially with limited leadership at the national level, and this isn't a discussion of national politics, and I'm not trying to criticize the national leadership here, but at the very least, there are mixed messages coming from the federal level. It seems to me that even people that have a historical distrust of government are saying, my gosh, what are we going to do? We need some leadership somewhere. And I think that the fact that there was a lot of support from the political leaders for those measures, you know, the library measure, which didn't really call for an increase, I don't think, it was just keeping it at the same level, and same with the police, the sheriff's levy in our county. But I think it has to do with a little bit of fear-based. Hey, you know, this is crazy, and if the government says this is good, maybe we should be willing to spend more money to help the homeless get a home, because in the long run it'll save us money. I was surprised. Those are the best explanations I can come up with. I'm very, very pleased about the measures passing. I think they're important to our community, as expensive as they might be.
Campaign finance reform seems to be headed for the November ballot. Now, we had Jason Kefauri on the program not too long ago talking about campaign finance reform. What's your take on this change to the Oregon state constitution? Because that's what it's going to take.
That is what it's going to take. I think it's fantastic. I'm really pleased with some of the successes that Jason and folks working with him have had, especially in Multnomah County. There's been a fair amount of support for putting in campaign limits. Let me tell you why I think it's so important. It's not just that people spend so much money on campaigns that you wonder if some of that money wouldn't be better spent providing food for hungry people, et cetera. I mean, there's that concern. But good gosh, when it costs so much money to run, you eliminate too many people from the possibility of candidacy. Take the city of Beaverton, for example. They have been promoting their minority for so long, and very well, with commissions and with training programs, trying to get them involved in city government and encouraging them to run for office. Some people of color, some people that have had a history of poverty, have been able to try to crack the barrier, but dear gosh, I need to see accessibility for office open up to more than just wealthy people. It costs way too much to run for office, and we need to make that campaigning much, much more accessible.
The last race for governor is a good example.
Oh, yes. That is such an incredible example. We had 4 million going for the Republican, at least, I think, and I don't remember how much for the Democrat. And why should they have to spend that much? If you control the donations, that's great. You need to control the expenditures, the allowed expenditures as well. And I'd like to see tax dollars given. It would be ideal if you had, say, a base coming from the government for your campaign, and then you could raise money, but you still had a limit on how much you could raise. I'm looking for equity in the ability to run, and I haven't seen that in this country ever.
So what should we look for in the November election?
Well, first of all, we have to talk a little bit about Beaverton. That's so odd, with such a different approach here. We've got two people running for an office. They both don't really like the way it's configured, and they're going to be fighting for an interesting kind of middle with different things to offer. And it was easy to talk in terms of experience versus enthusiasm. Well, that's not what it is anymore. I can't predict that. And even though the incumbent tends to have an asset, especially at this rough time when people want stability, I don't know. I'm going to call it for the incumbent, but it's going to be a close race. I also think that there isn't going to be much of a challenge by Jeffrey for Nafissa. I called things wrong before, but I think Nafissa will likely be successful. When I look at it statewide, I don't think anything's going to change much at all. We may have all statewide offices held by Democrats, as looks like Shemaya Fagan has managed to get the Democratic nomination, and we may not have a Republican Secretary of State anymore. But I don't see successful challenges by Republicans for state treasurer or any other statewide office. And when it comes to the seats in Washington County, with Mitch Greenlick having passed and his seat being open, I still think it's a Democrat seat. I don't think any seats in our county are going to change hands. I think we have too many seats in the state that are a given Democratic stronghold or a given Republican stronghold, less of them are Republicans, to the point where so many districts, you don't even have to, well, democracy calls for it, but it's almost a waste of money to run the election because everybody beforehand knows who's going to win. Some incumbents don't even have challengers. I think statewide, we're going to wind up with roughly the same setup, the same dynamic with a Democratic supermajority. And I think in Washington County, there'll be very little change as far as what party wins what seat.
Well, Rob, thank you very much for your insight on the results of the May primary and where we're headed in November. I appreciate your feedback.
Rick, it was a very pleasant conversation. I enjoyed it. And, you know, it's quite a complex situation. There's lots of ideas and lots of different ways to look at this. I would invite anybody listening to our conversation to share their feedback about the primary election. All they need to do is go to our website, insidewashco.org, and give us some feedback. Let's talk about this. And Rick, thanks for the opportunity to chat.
All right. As always, Rob, thanks again.
Yep. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson.
You are tuned into listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to Culture in Motion, the twice monthly KBOO program, featuring my co-host Ryan Danley, myself, Mike Crenshaw. What's up, Ryan?
How's it going, man? How's your week been?
It's been crazy, man. It's yet another iteration as time marches on through COVID-19 pandemic 2020.